Hello, this is Mark Shanton welcoming you to a discussion of the West End transfer for the Young Vic's production of Simply Heavenly to the Trafalgar Studios. The Young Vic, rendered homeless from its home in the Cut while it is being refurbished, is maintaining its London presence in a walkabout season of revivals of recent hits seen there with the return of Simply Heavenly, now presented under commercial auspices in the West End. To follow are the Young Vic's Icelandic circus version of Romeo and Juliet, transferring to the Playhouse in November, Sleeping Beauty is being revived at the Barbican in December, and A Raisin in the Sun returning to the Blue Brick Hammersmith in February. Together, these are a bracing testament to artistic director David Land's eclectic regime, but in terms of sheer discovery, the unearthing of Simply Heavenly, a 47-year-old Broadway flop that ran less than 2 months when it was first seen, is hard to beat. This slice of Harlem life, based around a character created by the novelist, playwright and poet Langston Hughes for a newspaper column he used to write, was originally turned into a musical by Hughes in 1957 and set to David Martin's blues, gospel and jazz soundtrack. Detailing the convoluted love life of Jesse B. Simple, played by Rashawn Stone and other denizens of Harlem's Paddy's Bar in which it is set, Josette Bishop-Mingo's production was premiered at the Young Vic in March 2003 and also features Clive Rowe and Ruby Turner as a pair whose own mating dance is one of the highlights of the show. So does Simply Heavenly live up to its title? With me to tell me if they think it does are critics John Nathan and Adam Scott. First of all, John, do you think it lives up to the title?
I think it does. It's a show that's short on plot, but very big on pleasure and lots of it. If I just go to the plot first, there are two aspects to it which are quite diverting. One is that you have the hero, Simple, who doesn't want to divorce his wife because he doesn't love her, which is an interesting paradox. His reason being that to pay for a divorce, he'd have to love the woman first, and because he doesn't love her, he's not going to pay for it. And there's another interesting piece of narrative which I thought featured very strongly, which was Simple's fantasy about being a general over Mississippi soldiers, which really did hark the piece and locate it to a time before the Black Panthers and black militancy rose in America. So those are the two interesting plot narrative things for me. But the real pleasure is the music, and you sit in this bar where every emotion is expressed through music, and I loved it for that.
Yeah, it's certainly stronger on mood than content, isn't it, Alan?
Absolutely. Simply Heavenly, simple story. The music, indeed, is the point of the show. The I think pop and rock and roots music often get treated very badly in the West End, on the West End stage, as if they are somehow too. The forms are somehow too banal. I think of Mark Steyn's book, Broadway Baby Say Goodnight, where he never misses an opportunity to swing a kick at sort of banal, as he sees it, banal music. But this was really very straight ahead and direct, not at all adorned and sort of complexed up for the musical stage. And I thought particularly the band were marvellous.
Just four of them as well.
Four-piece band.
Live on stage.
Fantastic horn player, some great percussion, a wonderful percussive upright bass, and a straight-ahead, simple piano that left all the room in the world for the fantastic voices. The fantastic voices went to town because they were given so much space in the arrangement.
And very interesting to see a musical, an old musical in the West End with a brand new score, effectively, because none of us have ever heard the score before. There's no cast album that I know of, and hopefully there'll be one of this one. Talking of those performances, I had a slight problem with Rashawn Stone as Simple. He wasn't quite the dynamic one I wanted that role to be. What did you think, John?
Well, I was attracted to the character because of him. I think that, this relaxed, loose-limbed sort of joie de vivre aspect to his character, and I was taken by him. I liked him. He's a character with a good heart, who wants to have lots of fun, and it's the fun that gets him into trouble. And I liked Stone and I liked the character.
Intriguingly, he went on to write a play for Josette Bishop-Mingo's Push 04 season at the Almeida earlier this year, which wasn't terribly good, Two Step.
So I gather, but I didn't see it.
Did you see it, Adam?
I didn't see it. I thought Storm was quite sweet, actually. Perhaps I can see what you mean. He wasn't the sort of cock of the walk, sort of sexy, springy step type character that you may have been looking for, but I thought he was very sweet, particularly in his sort of love scenes with his intended Joyce. I thought, and Paul G. Medford's choreography in those scenes in particular.
Yeah, I suppose my problem was I just wanted somebody stronger to anchor it, but sure. It so happens that the show is completely anchored, I think, by Clive Rowe and Ruby Turner in the subsidiary roles.
Yeah.
I mean, they completely steal the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, Clive Rowe especially. Ruby Turner's got this wonderful, almost Aretha Franklin voice, I'd say. I mean, she's that good. Mm. Clive Rowe, for me, though, just elevates every song and scene he's in or involved in. And I'm going to say something that I think is a bit radical here, because while he was doing his shimmying and his and those wonderful dance moves, he really brought to my mind Zero Mostel. And I thought, why can't Clive Rowe be the next Max Bialystok?
Yes.
And he'd be, you know, you could do a lot worse. And he's funny as well. You know, he's got great comic timing. So I think he could do it.
Well, he certainly played Mr. Snow, unpredictable casting in Carousel, and and other parts. I mean, Guys and Dolls famously, yeah, Daniel Rock and the Bird stole the show in that one too.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a major British musical comedy actor, despite the fact that, first of all, he's very big, and secondly, he's black, which are both limiting factors in certain musicals.
But he's very graceful as well. He's a very graceful performer, and size is no... There's no barrier to grace after watching Clive Rowe, that's for sure.
And likewise, Ruby Turner, who probably has the biggest top carriage we've ever seen on a Western stage. I mean, it was quite a sight in itself, wasn't it?
Indeed. I agree wholeheartedly. I think Clive is such an appealing performer.
Yeah.
And engaging.
And what about the very, very glamorous Nicola Hughes as the vampish girlfriend who has predatory eyes on him? She's been in Fosse in the West End and also Chicago. Amazing lady.
The fabulous cartoon sort of character, vamp, brought to mind. Is it like something like Tom and Jerry? Incredible lines and enormous sort of cartoon performances.
And then, managed to elicit sympathy as well, which is a... a very difficult thing to do with such a broad character.
Tough part, borderline misogynist sort of part, and I thought she did elicit great sympathy, absolutely.
And a tremendous ensemble all around her. I mean, it's one of those, and a really terrific range of talents.
Yeah.
I mean, the sadness for me is that there's all this great talent on the London stage, as represented by Simply Heavenly. They don't have anywhere else to go. I mean, I think it's amazing that in order to showcase this amazing black talent on the London stage, they've had to unearth a nearly 50-year-old forgotten Broadway musical. It's a great pity that there isn't anything indigenous, really, for them to do.
Yeah, well, perhaps, I go back to the idea of pulling Clive Rowe in the producers. That's a show which I don't think has any characters which are unknown to be black in the previous incarnations of that show. I can't see any reason why that wouldn't work perfectly well, and I hope there's no barrier to that.
And we have got the prospect of the joyful The Big Life coming from Stratford East.
Yeah.
Which are waiting, salivating, and waiting for that to come into the West End.
Which, of course, is a British musical.
Indeed.
Original British musical about black experience in this country, and quite refreshing for it. Because quite often, black musicals in the West End are reviews of things like Ain't Misbehaving or Bubbling Brown Sugar.
Mm.
They're not story-led musicals like this one. And then, and this is a story-led show, and yet the plot is kind of weak, which is a pity.
But the pleasure is big.
Yes.
We all agree.
Absolutely. And one thing we haven't touched on, the design. I thought that Rob Howell's design was absolutely beautiful. It was almost like a set for a production of An Iceman Cometh, set in a beautiful bar.
Yeah, beautiful bar set, sort of old-fashioned sort of gin palace bar with a split level at the back where the rooming houses where the characters lived were trucked on and off. Very economical. Ingenious set, fantastic.
In the Trafalgar Studios. Now, somewhat unlovely, I think. What do we think of the Trafalgar Studios?
No, I'm a big fella, and I like the Trafalgar Studios. I like the arena feel. I like sitting on top. The legroom is minimal at
best. And the width room even worse.
The width room is not worth speaking about. But I love the arena feel. I love looking down on the... it's a good shape.
As a smaller person, all around, I'm very happy there, actually. I could stretch out for mine. No, I think it's a very dramatic auditorium, actually, and probably the most dramatic auditorium in London, and for that reason alone, I'm always happy to go to Trafalgar Studios.
And, of course, it can accommodate this kind of transfer without making the show much bigger than it needs to be. I mean, the thrust stage looks great. I just find a problem with it. It's very steep. I find it too steep and too narrow. But that's probably me. I think on that note, thank you, John. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
Pleasure.